A small band of Hasmoneans, of Judah's men, overcame an infantry of 35,000. This was a miracle. The comparison made by Judah was to our story when the Assyrian army surrounded Jerusalem and an angel of the Almighty went out and struck all of them down. Welcome to Bible 365, episode 299, The Defeat of Assyria and the Spirit of Judah the Maccabee. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. Let us speak of Nicanor, enemy of the Jews. The name is not well known today, made all the more obscure by the fact that Jewish tradition also remembers a very different man named Nicanor, a righteous Jew who donated two glorious doors to the temple. But the Nicanor of which I speak was a Seleucid villain who was once known to all of Second Temple Judea, feared throughout the land. This Nicanor served as one of the Seleucid generals of Antiochus, the emperor of the Hanukkah story. And afterward, Nicanor served a successor of Antiochus, his nephew Demetrius. Today, Antiochus' name is known, but Nicanor's is not. This is because it is often assumed that the battle against the Seleucid Empire was won after the story of Hanukkah. But this is not true at all. As we have noted, Hanukkah marked only the capturing and cleansing of the temple. But the war with the Seleucids continued, and it was Nicanor who, after the Hanukkah story, was the central enemy in those battles. Nicanor was known as an elephantarch, one who wielded elephants in battle, adding extra power to his already seemingly unbeatable armies. And yet, Nicanor was beaten. In the accounts written in that period, many of the events embodying the central phenomenon of the Maccabee campaign, the defeat, as we say in our prayers, of the many at the hands of the few, were to be discovered in the battles against General Nicanor above all. Thus we are told in the second book of Maccabees, chapter 8, of a plot by Nicanor to sell a number of captured Jews into slavery. Judah the Maccabee gathered his forces and delivered an eloquent address. Quote, Nicanor determined to make up for the king the tribute due to the Romans, 2,000 talents, by selling the captured Jews into slavery. So he immediately sent to the towns on the seacoast, inviting them to buy Jewish slaves and promising to hand over 90 slaves for a talent, not expecting the judgment from the Almighty that was about to overtake him. Word came to Judah concerning Nicanor's invasion, and when he told his companions of the arrival of the army, those who were cowardly and distrustful of God's justice ran off and got away. Others sold all their remaining property and at the same time implored the Lord to rescue those who had been sold by the ungodly Nicanor before he ever met them, if not for their own sake, then for the sake of the covenants made with their ancestors, and because he had called them by his holy and glorious name. But Maccabeus gathered his forces together to the number 6,000 and exhorted them not to be frightened by the enemy, and not to fear the great multitude of Gentiles who were wickedly coming against them, but to fight nobly, keeping before their eyes the lawless outrage that the Gentiles had committed against the holy place, and the torture of the derided city, and besides the overthrow of their ancestral way of life. For they trust to arms and acts of daring, he said, but we trust in the Almighty God, who is able with a single nod to strike down those who are coming against us, and even if necessary, the whole world. Moreover, he told them of the occasions when help came to their ancestors, how, in the time of Sanherib, when 185,000 perished, end quote. So Judah says, highlighting how Hezekiah, king of Judah, was saved from Sanherib, king of Assyria. In this speech recorded in the book of Maccabees, of which I have only quoted a part, the story of Hezekiah is not the only wondrous salvific victory that Judah the Maccabee described, but it is the first. And as we shall see, the miracle of the defeat of Assyria, as described in the Bible, was one that clearly impacted Judah the Maccabee, or as he is also called, Maccabeus. To better understand why Hezekiah's story was so impactful centuries later, we turn to Chronicles and ponder how the example of a king of Judah imprinted itself on a man named Judah, who was one of the most famous heroes in Jewish history. Having abandoned the idolatrous ways of his father Ahaz, having thrown off theologically and politically the yoke of Assyria, the righteous King Hezekiah now faces the wrath of Sanherib, the Assyrian tyrant. As we saw, and as is depicted in artifacts that now can be found in the British Museum, the army of Assyria, ruled by Sanherib, rampages through Judah, destroying Lachish and killing and capturing its defenders. Hezekiah prepares Jerusalem for war. Chapter 32. Also he strengthened himself and built up all the walls that was broken, and raised it up to the towers and another wall without, and repaired the Milo in the city of David, and made darts and shields in abundance. And he set captains of war over the people and gathered them together to him in the street of the gate of the city and spoke encouragingly to them, saying, "Be strong and courageous. Be not afraid nor dismayed of the king of Assyria, nor for all the multitude that is with him. For there be more with us than with him. With him is an arm of flesh, but with us is the Lord our God to help us and to fight our battles." And the people rested themselves upon the words of Hezekiah, king of Judah. Note what Chronicles is stressing. We know, of course, that at the final moment of the siege, Hezekiah will throw himself before God, pleading in prayer. And that, of course, is entirely appropriate and what was called for. But Chronicles is also describing how Hezekiah not only prays to God, but also speaks to his people, inspiring them to faith in God. It was this faith that Sennacherib seeks to undo. Verse 9. After this did Sennacherib, king of Assyria, send his servants to Jerusalem, but he himself laid siege against Lachish and all his power with him, unto Hezekiah, king of Judah, and unto all Judah that were at Jerusalem, saying, "Thus saith Sennacherib, king of Assyria, whereon do ye trust that ye abide in the siege in Jerusalem? Doth not Hezekiah persuade you to give over yourselves to die by famine and by thirst, saying, 'The Lord our God shall deliver us out of the hand of the king of Assyria'? Hath not the same Hezekiah taken away his high places and his altars and commanded Judah and Jerusalem, saying, 'Ye shall worship before one altar and burn incense upon it'? Know ye not what I and my fathers have done unto all the people of other lands? Were the gods of the nations of those lands anyways able to deliver their lands out of mine hand? Who was there among all the gods of those nations that my fathers utterly destroyed that could deliver his people out of mine hand, that your God should be able to deliver you out of mine hand? Now therefore let not Hezekiah deceive you, nor persuade you on this matter, neither yet believe him. For no god of any nation or kingdom was able to deliver his people out of mine hand and out of the hand of my fathers. How much less shall your God deliver you out of mine hand?" To this scoffing by Sennacherib, Hezekiah responds with prayer to God, and his prayers are answered. Verse 20. And for this cause Hezekiah the king and the prophet Isaiah the son of Amoz prayed and cried to heaven. And the Lord sent an angel which cut off all the mighty men of valor and the leaders and captains in the camp of the king of Assyria. So he returned with shame of face to his own land. And when he was come into the house of his God, they that came forth out of his own body slew him there with the sword. Thus the Lord saved Hezekiah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem from the hand of Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, and from the hand of all other, and guided them on every side. Jerusalem is saved. An angel strikes down all of the Assyrian troops. Sennacherib himself is killed in Assyria. And Hezekiah emerges in the Bible at this moment as a model of leadership, first and foremost in his turning to God, and also in his teaching his subjects to turn to God. It was the inspiration of Hezekiah that Judah the Maccabee seemed to draw on. And the book of Maccabees, describing Judah's speech before facing Nicanor, tells us what occurred after that. Maccabees describes what followed Judah's invocation of Hezekiah and his spirited speech. With these words, he filled them with courage and made them ready to die for their laws and their country. And then Maccabees further tells us, with the Almighty as their ally, they killed more than 9,000 of the enemy and wounded and disabled most of Nicanor's army and forced them all to flee. Thus was a victory over Nicanor achieved. This battle against the mighty man of elephantine forces is described by Judah as a battle between the faith of the Jews and the power of the Seleucids. And this is made even more clear when the book of Maccabees describes the final battle between Judah's forces and the Seleucid general. This is a slightly long passage, but it is an important one, for it tells us how Judah, or Maccabeus, is described at this very critical moment. 2 Maccabees 15. Maccabeus, observing the masses that were in front of him and the varied supply of arms and the savagery of the elephants, stretched out his hands toward heaven and called upon the Lord who works wonders. For he knew that it is not by arms, but as the Lord decides, that he gains the victory for those who deserve it. He called upon him in these words, "O Lord, you sent your angel in the time of King Hezekiah of Judea, and he killed fully 185,000 in the camp of Sennacherib. So now, O sovereign of the heavens, send the good angel to spread terror and trembling before us. By the might of your arm, may these blasphemers who come against your holy people be struck down." With these words, he ended his prayer. Nicanor and his troops advanced with trumpets and battle songs, but Judah and his troops met the enemy in battle with invocations to God and prayers. So, fighting with their hands and praying to God in their hearts, they laid low at least 35,000 and were greatly gladdened by God's manifestation. When the action was over and they were returning with joy, they recognized Nicanor lying dead in full armor. Then there was shouting and tumult, and they blessed the sovereign Lord in the language of their ancestors. Then the man who was ever in body and soul the defender of his people, the man who maintained his youthful goodwill towards his compatriots, ordered them to cut off Nicanor's head and arm and carry them to Jerusalem. Nicanor is defeated. Jerusalem gives glory to God. And Maccabees concludes the story by telling us, and they all decreed by public vote never to let this day go unobserved, but to celebrate the 13th day of the 12th month, which is called Adar in the Aramaic language, the day before Mordechai's day. Ladies and gentlemen, several fascinating points emerge from this tale. A small band of Hasmoneans, of Judah's men, overcame an infantry of 35,000. This was a miracle. The comparison made by Judah was to our story when the Assyrian army surrounded Jerusalem and an angel of the Almighty went out and struck all of them down. The victory of the Hasmoneans was therefore seen as a day to be marked year after year. It was once celebrated on the day before Mordechai's day, meaning the day before Purim. For us today, the 13th of Adar is a day of fasting and prayer preceding our moment of celebration. But that is a later tradition. The day before Purim, we are now able to understand, was originally a celebration of its own. During the Second Temple period, Purim was preceded by a celebration of Judah's victory over Nicanor, a victory inspired by the story of Hezekiah. Today, in many circles, Judah the Maccabee is remembered for his achievements as a warrior and for his bravery. He was indeed a great warrior, and he reflected astonishing bravery. But truly honoring Judah means remembering him as he was and as he understood himself, as an heir to Hezekiah, whose miraculous defense of Judea's Jews was seen by Judah and his men as an heir to Hezekiah. For Judah saw the salvation of Jerusalem in the age of Hezekiah as a sign that the God who preserved his people against Assyria would also preserve them against the Seleucids, a God whose existence can be seen in the eternity of the people that remembers Judah to this day. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.